Hey, you're listening to the Casper Faith Podcast, where you can catch up on and re-listen to encouraging messages shared by the staff here at the church. Thank you so much for joining us. We hope these words inspire you, challenge you, and expose you to God's love in a meaningful way. Enjoy the message.
Well, it's good to have all of you with us this morning. I want to welcome you to our service, and especially those of you who are online. This morning, we are going to begin a new series called The Land Between. I think most of us would recognize that the year 2020 has been a very unusual year. It's really turned everything upside down. Everything that once was normal is now not normal, and we're wondering, when is normal going to ever happen again? Some of you started homeschooling your kids because the thought of them going to school and then shutting down and they'd have to start doing the online stuff, you realize I'm just going to do the online stuff all year long. Some of you are wondering, when is this going to end? I know my sister-in-law who lives in Kansas City put her kids in school. They shut down a few weeks. She's at home. She's homeschooling them and she's just going, when's this going to get back to normal? She's got three kids under the age of sixth grade that she is working with, and she's never homeschooled before, and it's just so much fun. Many of you have lost income, lost hours, or even lost your job, and you've been looking for a job, but you can't find one. Or maybe you've been told that you're going to be hired back, but it still hasn't happened. And you're waiting for normal to come back, and it's not taking place. How do we navigate these difficult transition middle times? And they're not just caused by COVID. They're caused by just normal, everyday life. For example, the doctor's report comes back, and it says tumor is malignant. And you're now going, okay, what treatment do I do? How long is the treatment going to last? Will I be cured or will I not be cured? Maybe you've been dating someone a long time and you've been expecting a proposal and they're going to have this serious conversation and you think you're getting a ring, but and the person says, you know what? I think we should date other people. And you're going, I have waited. I've waited for years. I thought this was the one. How much longer do I have to wait for God to bring Mr. or Miss Right into my life? Sometimes your singleness comes after you're married. You lose a spouse to divorce or to death. And now you're just kind of in this middle ground. You really don't fit in anymore with the friends in the group you used to hang out with. People treat you differently. They speak to you differently. And you're wondering, how long is this uncomfortable transition time going to last? Sometimes the land in between, this transition, comes with a phone call. Dad, I'm at the police station. Your mom has had a stroke. We think that's what it is. How soon can you get to the hospital? Sometimes it comes in the form of a conversation. Your mother and I are getting a divorce. Mom, Dad, I'm pregnant. We're moving. Anytime one of these situations occurs in your life, your whole world is turned upside down. It goes topsy-turvy, and you've now entered a place that I'm calling the land between. It's what was normal and what is going to be your new normal, your desire, your destination, but you're caught in this middle place of difficult transition. We're going to talk about for the next several weeks, how do we navigate difficult times? How do we find God in difficult transitions? It's based on a book by Pastor Jeff Mannion by the same name, The Land Between. And I encourage you to pick it up if you're maybe struggling with it. It's a fantastic book, but I just want to share with you some principles. We're going to start today with number one, and we're going to be looking a lot at the nation of Israel because they experienced the land of between. For 400 years, They were slaves in Egypt, all right? They were slaves in Egypt. God wants to bring them out, so God speaks to Moses, and we see this in Exodus chapter 3, verse 8. God says he wants them to go into the promised land to become free, and it says, I have come down to deliver them out of the hand of the Egyptians and to bring them up from the land to a good and large land, to a land flowing with milk and honey. Now Moses accepts the charge. He says, yes, Lord, I will do it. But out of the land of slavery and into the land of promise flowing with milk and honey, do you realize there is no timetable on that? When you read it, you think, oh, it's going to come out and go in. Come out and go in. It's going to be really quick. It was not a quick journey from the land of slavery to the land of promise. There was this middle space, the land between the wilderness that Israel stayed in for a period of time. It was a barren place, but it was a necessary middle place. It was necessary because it was in the wilderness, the land between, that Israel received the law, which was the core of their covenant with God. It was in the middle place that Israel received the tabernacle, the portable tent of worship that they would take with them, and the whole sacrificial worship system of how to worship God, how to draw near to God, that came in the land between. It was in the land between this middle place, the wilderness, that Israel received the laws that would help them govern them as a nation once God established them in the land of promise. So many things happened in the land between. It was necessary. And that brings us to our first point this morning. If you're taking notes, we have hard copies in the back. You can always pick one up. Or for those of you who are tapped into YouVersion, go to the events page. You can find Casper Faith and our services there, and our notes are right there. But the very first thing that we need to realize about the land between is that the land between is a place of preparation. The land between is a place of preparation. It's a necessary middle space where we are formed into the people of God and we're established in our connection with the Lord. I'm going to say that again. This middle place, this land of between is a place to prepare us, to form us to be God's people and to establish a greater connection with God than we've ever had before. That is the purpose God brings us into these difficult transitions. Israel's time in this wasteland, because that's really what the wilderness was, it was a wasteland. This time in the wasteland was not to be a waste. It was to be a time of development. It was pivotal to their formation as the nation of God's children. As they're leaving Egypt, they are more like the Egyptians than they're like the children of Abraham. Their father Abraham was a man of faith. They knew about Abraham, but they didn't know the God of Abraham. They didn't know the God of Isaac, the God of Jacob. And yet God is taking them to the land that he promised Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. But they are nowhere near people that have the character and the faith of their father Abraham. So God wants to develop them in this time, in this land between, so that they can become the people that they need to be. They were unprepared, but God said, I'm going to take this desert time to shape you, to mold you, to refine you, and to make you my people. And friends, do you know that's still true today? God does that to you and to me. God takes the difficult transition places in life, the things that we never saw coming, because he wants to mold us and form us and shape us into his people. God uses these tough transitions to make us stronger. God uses these tough transitions to make us better. It's a place to prepare for what God has at the next step. So the first thing we need to realize when we're going through a difficult transition is that God is preparing me for something. How many like to be prepared? I don't like to be unprepared. I like to know what's happening. I think none of us like to be unprepared, and yet I would say many of us hate the land between. We hate the transition period. We don't want that, but that is necessary to get us ready for what God has next for you and I. Okay? The second thing that we need to realize about the land between is that the land between is a hard place. It is a hard place. It's dry and barren. Even though Egypt was a land of slavery, of oppression and hardship, it was also a lush, fertile land. The Nile River made it a prosperous agricultural region. So even though it was full of slavery and oppression, it was nice and beautiful and lush and full of food. And the promised land that God promised, it was a land flowing with milk and honey. It was prosperous. But this transition time, that was desert. That was dry. That was barren. And what they didn't realize is that going from one lush place, one lush, fertile, prosperous place to another is not an immediate step. There is a time of dryness and barrenness in between. And that applies to our life. And this is the thing. When we go through these transition times, if we just realize this is going to be hard, this is going to be difficult, this is going to be dry, then we're not going to be blindsided by the transition, but we can brace for the transition. If we see that we've entered this time, something bad happens in our life with our finances, our health, a relationship, a work situation, and we find ourselves in this difficult transition, realize it is supposed to be hard. Because that's what it is. But this hard time is to prepare me. I have seen too many times when Christians enter the land between a difficult transition, they give up on God because they think it shouldn't be hard. Life should be easy. Friends, Jesus said, in this world, you will have tribulation. I didn't hear any amens on that. I wonder why. Do you realize that was a promise? We love claiming the promises of God. My God will supply all my needs according to his riches and glory. Woo! But we don't want to claim in this world you will have tribulation. Life's transitions are hard. Expect it. Don't be blindsided and cast away your trust in God when you enter the land between, because it's a place of preparation. In your notes this morning, the desert will not destroy me, it will develop me. The desert will not destroy me, it will develop me. I know it may not seem like it right now. It may not seem like it in this difficult place, but it will develop you if you allow it. We make the choice as to how we're going to respond to the desert. God did several miracles to set Israel free from Egyptian slavery. Those miracles, along with the Red Sea and a number of miracles he did in the wilderness, was to manifest his presence and to show Israel that he was loving, he was kind, and that he was all-powerful, and that they could trust their God. And yet, they would have not seen the power and the love of God if God did not allow these difficult situations to come in. We like seeing miracles, but do you realize to see a miracle, you need an impossible situation? If you want to walk on the water, you've got to be in a stormy boat. If you want to see someone raised from the dead, the person's got to be dead in the first place. You see, they saw the Red Sea. They saw the miracles, and they didn't realize that God was manifesting who he was and what he can do for them. And he wanted to develop them because they were an idolatrous people. They were more like Egypt. Later on, as we go through this study, you'll see how when Moses delayed up on Mount Sinai receiving the law, that Israel asked Aaron to form them a god, an idol that they could worship, because who knows what's happened to this Moses character. There was so much idolatry in them, and God was trying to get the Egypt out of them, and he was doing it through the land between, because it was through those miracles in these difficult times that God could reveal his character, his presence, his power, who he was. And Israel missed it. They didn't realize that's what God was doing. In Numbers 11, you can turn to Numbers 11. I encourage you over the next few weeks, read through this chapter, because we're going to be spending a lot of time. There are five different principles that are found in Numbers 11. And so you'll get quite familiar with this chapter. But in Numbers 11, Israel has been in the land between for a year. All right? They will have been there 1 year when you come to Numbers chapter 11. And they had been slaves for 400 years. They had been slaves for 400 years. What's their attitude? One of, thank God, finally we're free. No, it's an attitude of complaining. Take a look at verse 1, Numbers 11. Now the people, everybody say it together, complained. The people complained about their hardships in the hearing of the Lord. Verse 4, if only we had meat to eat. We remember the fish we ate in Egypt at no cost. Also, the cucumbers, melons, leeks, onions, and garlic. But now we have lost our appetite. We never see anything but this manna. This brings us to our third point about the land between this morning. The land between, even though it's a barren ground, it's a dry ground, it is fertile ground for complaint. You'd think nothing grows in the land between, but there's one thing that grows really, really well, and that is complaining. Complaining grows really well in these difficult transitions of life. And we see that with Israel. They're bitter, they're worn out, they're angry, and this frustration of being here for a year has morphed into a spirit of complaint, taking up residence in their hearts. I ask you this morning, has complaint taken up residence in your heart? Are you going through a difficult time and you find that you're just kind of grumpy and negative and complaining and murmuring all the time? As a spirit of complaint become part of you, this is, we're sick of this manna, eating this manna for a year. Now, I have to admit, if I ate the same thing every meal, breakfast, lunch, and dinner for a year, I'd probably get a little sick of it too. If you don't think you would, I challenge you, pick one food item this week, and from now until next Sunday, eat only that. Okay? And see how you do after a week of eating the same thing. Not just a year. You only go a week, all right? And then don't be too hard on them when they go for 52 weeks eating the same thing. But they had complaint, and they said, I'm sick of this manna. Maybe you're saying, I'm sick of living in my in-law's basement. I'm sick of being asked what line of work I'm in, and I'm fumbling for the words to say. Maybe you'd say, I'm sick of enduring wave after wave of medical tests with no clear diagnosis. I'm sick of waiting for this depression to lift. I'm sick of waiting for Mr. or Miss Wright. I'm sick of visiting a mother in the nursing home who asks me, who are you, 3-4 times every time I visit her. I am sick of this manna. I am sick of the land between this transition time that I am in. You know, when you think about it, at face value, we think, well, complaining isn't that bad. I mean, it's not like immorality. It's not like murder. It's not like robbing a bank. But God takes complaining very, very seriously. In Numbers chapter 11, verse 20, after they've said, we're sick of this manna, we remember the food, the onions, the leeks, the meat, all the stuff we had in Egypt. Verse 20, it says, you have rejected the Lord who is among you. You have wailed before him, saying, why did we ever leave Egypt? Apparently, the Israelites griping about food wasn't just griping about food. They were griping against God. Their complaint wasn't about food. Their complaint was against God because they were rejecting God. What they were saying when they said, if only we were back in Egypt. Now remember this, slavery, being beaten, whipped, working long, hard hours, they were crying out because when God came to Moses, Moses says, the cries of my people have come up to me. They were saying, God, get us out of here. And God answers their prayer. They had forgotten how bad they had it. And now they're saying, if only we were back in Egyptian slavery, we could have some better food. We would have been better off if God left us alone and did nothing. That's what they're saying. That's why God took this so seriously, because they rejected him. And we need to be careful, because in our lives, as we complain, a spirit of complaint can be lodged in us to such a degree that it develops into a rejection of God. If you complain long enough, as complaining grows, your faith shrivels, and you will come to a place where you chuck off God and say, that's it, I'm done, I'm finished. That's why complaining is so very, very serious. We cannot complain when we find ourselves in the land between. Now, does that mean we can't honestly express ourselves to God? God, I'm sick of manna. I wish I could have something else. No, there's a big difference between complaining and honest expression to God, all right? We're going to get into that next week. It's a topic all on its own, so come back next week. Same bat time, same bat channel, same bat station, all right? And we'll share with you, but we got to be careful not to become a people that complain. Our response, in your notes this morning, our response to discomfort reveals the person we are, and it sets the trajectory for the person we are becoming. Our response to discomfort, to hardship, to harsh conditions, it reveals the person we are, and it sets the trajectory for the person we are becoming. You could really say that your attitude is the prophet of your future. Your attitude is the prophet of your future. And if you're complaining incessantly, then your future doesn't look very good. When we look at Israel, they were repeat offenders. This was not an isolated incident, okay? When you look back as they travel through, this just demonstrates, this occurrence in Numbers was just a repeated pattern of a response of complaining to hardship in their life. There's four earlier instances, Exodus 14, 15, 16, and 17. I'm just going to give you a quick synopsis of those. We're not going to look at them, but they're in your notes there. In Exodus 14, it's crossing the Red Sea. God has set Israel free from the Egyptians. They've marched out of Egypt. They've plundered the Egyptians. They're rich. God blessed them and made up for the lack of 400 years of slavery. But they come to the Red Sea. And what's really interesting, it says, God took them by the Red Sea instead of going up to the land of the Philistines. What do you know about the land of the Philistines? They were giants, weren't they? And God says, lest they face the Philistines, and they turn around and they go back. God knew they weren't ready for that. They had to be prepared. So he takes them to the Red Sea, and they get to the Red Sea, and all of a sudden, they hear this noise, and they see pharaohs, or they see dust. And it's horses and chariots. The whole army of Egypt has been summoned by Pharaoh in rage and revenge. He says, I'm going to bring my slaves back. I lost my free workforce. What in the world was I thinking? We're getting them back. So he comes after Israel, and now they're trapped. The Red Sea on one side, Egyptian army on the other side. And what do they do? In chapter 14, verse 11 and 12, they say to Moses, because there were no graves in Egypt, have you taken us away to die in the wilderness? Why have you so dealt with us to bring us out of Egypt? Is this not the word we told you in Egypt, saying, let us alone that we may serve the Egyptians? It would have been better for us to serve the Egyptians than that we should die in the wilderness. They're complaining, but God provided. He turned the sea into a highway. We sang about that today earlier. He turned the sea into a highway. God miraculously provided. They've seen 10 plagues, and now this army that could come after them at any time, God's wiped them out. They don't have to fear Egypt anymore. You would think they would be a people of faith, of confidence and trust. But you go 3 days later, Exodus chapter 15, they can't find any water. It's nasty, it's hot, they're dehydrated. Children are crying. Grandparents are fainting. And what do they do? Look at verse 2, chapter 15, verse 2. The people, say it with me, complained against Moses, what shall we drink? They find water, and this water is bitter. And God supernaturally turns it sweet. It's good water. They can drink it. God comes through again. But they go a few days later, and now there's another basic need of life, and it's food. They're out of food. They have no more food, and they're complaining. In Exodus 16, verse 2, it says, the whole congregation of the children of Israel complained against Moses and Aaron in the wilderness. The children of Israel said, oh, that we died by the hand of the Lord in the land of Egypt, when we sat by the pots of meat and when we ate bread to the full, for you have brought us out into the wilderness to kill this whole assembly with hunger. Again, harsh condition, their response, they complain, and what is God? God gives them manna. God gives them food for about 3 million people. Out in the wilderness where there's no McDonald's drive-thrus, there's no Walmarts, there's no grocery stores, there's no nothing. Supernatural feeding 3 million people. God was showing them, you can trust me. I love you. I care for you. Depend on me. But do they learn their lesson? No, because in Exodus 17, they're out of water again. And this time, unlike chapter 15 where they found water and it was bitter, there's no water at all. And in 17:3 it says, the people thirsted for water. They complained against Moses. Why have you brought us up out of Egypt to kill us and our children, our livestock with thirst? I mean, it's kind of like a broken record here. You brought us out here to kill us. You brought us out here to kill us. You brought us out here to... What kind of God is this? And yet God takes a rock, something that is dead, and he brings water out of the rock. He brings life out of death. God, who I think was trying to speak to them, I don't care how bad, how much death, how bad this seems, I am going to bring life out of it if you respond to your hardship properly. In your notes this morning, God was leading Israel in a life-threatening, impossible situations to prove he can be trusted. And friends, that's what God does to us. When we go through a difficult transition time, God leads us through them to show, you can trust me. I am trustworthy. You can depend upon me. He wanted the hardships to train them and to transform them, because they were not ready to be giant killers in the land of promise. There were giants in the land of promise. There were battles they're going to have to fight. There were walled cities that looked impossible. And God's trying to prepare them and saying, hey, you can trust me in the desert, because if you can't handle this, there's no way you can handle the destiny of the promised land. Because there's battles galore in the promised land. Trust me and let me transform you into the destiny that I have waiting for you. What is our response to harsh conditions? Some of us, we have seething anger. There's like this volcanic activity just boiling underneath the surface of us when harsh things happen. Some of us, we just withdraw silently and we slip into depression. Some people choose retail therapy. You know what retail therapy is? Gotta go shopping here and buy something else to come home and fill an already full closet. There's many different unhealthy responses that people take. Some people resort to substance, alcohol, sugar, drugs when things go bad. Are there any unhealthy responses in your life when harsh conditions come? James chapter 1, verse 3 says, "The testing of your faith produces perseverance." Friends, when life begins to spin out of control and you feel like God's not in control, He doesn't care, He's not there, nothing could be further from the truth. This is a time to prepare you, to test you, to get you ready for God to take you to the next level of the promised land. Trust in God. And here's the thing, sometimes our responses seem so normal that it doesn't feel like we're choosing them, because we just naturally gravitate to them. It's kind of like this ball right here. This ball, if I let go of it, it automatically drops to the ground. Every time. Gravity just pulls it to the ground automatically. And what we don't realize is that this ball really symbolizes our hearts. It's my heart. And when I go through a difficult time, I am naturally drawn to complain. I lost my job, I complain. My boyfriend or girlfriend breaks up, I complain. I get a bad report from the doctor, and I complain. And that is what is natural, is that we resort to complaining in our lives. And what God is wanting us to do is instead choose a different response, because it is so easy in life when something bad happens that we just kind of let go of control and we complain. And so when something bad happens, God doesn't want us to let go of control, and He says, no, I want you to deliberately look a little higher, look to the author and the finisher of your faith, and put your trust in me. Just don't let go, don't complain, don't give in to negativity. Realize that this land between is a necessary middle place to prepare you for the promised land. Don't give up on me. Trust me. Learn from me as your God, and that if you let go, I will hold you up. I am developing you. This desert will not destroy you. This wilderness time is temporary. You see, the desert was never to be their final destination. But you know what? Because they complained for that whole generation, that was their final destination. They didn't break out of the desert because they complained. If only they would have just trusted God with their heart, with their circumstance, they would have been giant killers. They would have entered the land flowing with milk and honey. Friends, this morning, you and I have a choice when we're in the land between. What's your response? Would you pray with me this morning? Dear Jesus, I thank you that we can trust you with everything. You died on the cross, showing us that we can trust you with our eternity, and your Spirit lives within us. showing us that we can trust you with the earthly. God, develop in us a spirit of trust. This morning, some of you are here, and I just want you to examine your response to difficult times. When you're under harsh conditions, do you repeatedly complain? Is that the pattern of your life? Or maybe you see another unhealthy response, the retail therapy, the anger, the depression, the withdrawal, and you realize that you are not trusting God in these difficult transitions. If you're here this morning, you'd say, I need to trust God with my difficult times. I need to stop complaining or whatever it is. I need to trust God and not choose an unhealthy choice. So I'd like you just to raise your hand this morning. Just put your hand up this morning. I need to trust God with the transition, the valley I'm walking through. That's awesome. There may be some of you here today, you've never trusted God with your life, with your eternal destiny. You're not a Christian. Maybe you've been trusting in your own goodness. I know a lot of people, when I was growing up, I trusted in my goodness to get me to heaven, but our righteousness, our good deeds are like filthy rags. They do not cleanse our sin. The wages of sin is death. Friend, if you are trusting in your goodness to get to heaven, you will end up in hell. Because God loved the world so much that He gave His one and only Son, Jesus Christ, and Jesus gave His life. He died. His death penalty took the wages of sin out of play for you and me so that we can be saved. And we need to receive God's forgiveness and God's leadership for us to go to heaven. And if you have never received God's forgiveness in your life, and you've never received His leadership, you've never put God in charge, this is an opportunity for you this morning. If you want to become a Christian, a follower of Jesus, it's a moment between you and God. Would you just raise your hand saying, I want to become a follower of Jesus. I need Him to forgive me. I need Him to lead me. I need to give up control of my life. Thank you. I see that hand. Anyone else this morning? Just lift your hand up today. Anyone else today? I'm going to say this prayer, and I'd like all of you to repeat after me. Lord God, I am giving up control. You be in charge of my life and of my desert. I won't worry. I won't complain. I trust you. I have done wrong. Forgive me of my sin. Be my forgiver and be my leader. Help me to follow you. Spirit, lead me. I trust you, God, with everyone and everything. Thank you, Jesus, for loving me. Amen.
We hope that you've enjoyed today's message, and thanks again for joining us on the Casper Faith Podcast.